It's been almost 5 years since I transitioned from longtime member to staff member as the adult programming coordinator. You may know that I was born into a Unitarian family before the merge with the Universalists. I've come to appreciate the awe and humility that the Universalists brought to the mix. I have fond memories of Easter flower communions and the dark, quiet candlelight Christmas services. I also remember sitting in my fifth grade Sunday school class, bored out of my mind, with crayons and paper in front of us to keep our idle hands busy as the uninspired teacher read us Bible stories. Conversations with adults were more academic than religious in my memory. We've come a long way since then, thanks to the UA's curriculum and professional development and our own professionals here. I joined this church as a young adult 40 years ago, I think, like next month. I have a card to prove it. And it was a no-brainer. Maybe that's the problem. It was too easy. But I needed a community when I moved to this city. As the years went by, I realized that I also needed to figure out the spiritual piece for myself. Many of you here talk about why you left the religion of your childhood, and I had to figure out why I should stay. Up until this point, I wasn't comfortable with God language. I didn't know how to be a truly good friend with a Christian. I think I wondered why they would want me for a friend too. Then in time, something made me open and willing to listen to other religious sources that I wasn't open to before. I read the writings of Henry Nouwen, Anne Lamott, Pema Chodron, Gregory Boyle, the list goes on. When my first marriage was ending, I was grateful when my former boss said that she was praying for me. It meant something different to me. I received it as a gift. I also remember reciting the prayer of St. Francis, holding on to the beautiful words of forgiveness and light. I believe now that had I not been here, free of dogma and creed, I would not have been able to freely explore these new spiritual paths. I believe that I'm still sustained by the shift I made to an openness to other possibilities, that we don't have it all figured out. The mystery that surrounds us, I can call God, and the love that some call Christian. So when I accepted my role as adult programming coordinator, I was hoping that I could serve a community that I already valued and that you all would give me much in return. What I didn't count on was that this deep learning we've undertaken together would first require us to get comfortable and then insist we be open and willing to further our learning in order to make deeper connections here and in the community. Now, my spiritual self, my heart, knows that I don't have a choice but to move forward. Because once you've gotten this far with what you know, there's no turning back. You can't unlearn the facts about systemic injustice. You can't unlearn the knowledge that people have been hurting for a very long time. UU Minister Kathleen McTeague says that any religion worth the name should help shift the behaviors toward the common greater good. So we articulate the meaning and practice of our faith through our actions that reveal and enact our core values. As I stepped out into the community this month to learn from various organizations about their work with immigrant and LGBTQ communities, I went with my empty cup. But I arrived grounded by my faith. I am grounded spiritually by this faith community in the knowledge that we are here as witnesses to each other's lives in sickness and in health, laughing, crying, and learning together.
When I started as membership coordinator almost 4 years ago, I understood that I didn't really know what I was getting into. I was already an involved member of this congregation, a dedicated volunteer, and had recently served on our board of trustees. Still, I knew working here was going to be unlike any other experience I'd had. It felt like making a leap into the unknown. Unlike staff in many other congregations, I am still a pledging member. I continue to attend classes and activities, and I still participate in some small groups. I have friends here. But I had to let go of what my experience as a member used to be. The line between my work life and the rest of my life isn't always so clear. Before, I didn't need to consider that someone here or out in the community might take my words and actions as representing my workplace or religion. I had to let go of some of my anonymity. That question, "So what do you do for a living?" had never before led to me explaining Unitarian Universalism. I do like to tell people about it, but maybe not in every social situation. I used to be able to volunteer in my congregation without working. Now, that's really not a thing. I even had to give up my favorite volunteer role ever, advisor to our senior high youth. To be open to the new ideas and different ways of doing things that would be part of this job, and to serve the best way I can, I needed to let go of assumptions, ideas, and ways of communicating I'd learned other places. For instance, I've worked in places where we were all expected to say the same things and express the same opinions, or risk, at minimum, getting talked to about not being a team player. So I wouldn't say much and would try not to even consider if I thought what we were doing was right, because that would have really frustrated me. Here, I'm encouraged to share what I think and feel, as long as I do that respectfully. It surprised me to discover how uncomfortable that would be. Feeling like I had to suppress my perspective had gotten comfortable. Introverted, quiet, not so confident me had to let go of my tendency to hide in the corner and contribute nothing. Who knew I might sometimes have something to share? It's been such a gift for me to have this job that allows me to do work that is so meaningful to me. Had I refused to empty my cup of what I'd done and learned before, I wouldn't have had room to receive that gift.
Good morning. Tuesday morning of this week, we were greeted with the news of Silent Sam's demise. That the evening before, despite police protection that had cost UNC close to $400,000 over the past year, protesters had managed to pull Sam from his pedestal near the entrance to the campus. To paraphrase the epigraph for this morning's service, "Ah, there are mornings when everything brims with promise, especially an empty pedestal." 50 years ago, almost to the day, I was a wide-eyed freshman, just beginning my tenure on that same campus. Somewhere along the way, I heard the schoolboy's myth about Silent Sam, the one about him and the virgins, and I knew he was a Confederate memorial, but that was about it. I knew nothing of his connection to the ugly resurgence of white supremacist movements in the decades after Reconstruction. Even when I graduated 4 years later, with an American Studies degree, no less, I was mostly ignorant of that chapter in our nation's history. As some of you know, I am interested in history. I have worked professionally as an architectural historian, and I'm interested in my own family history, which has deep roots here in North Carolina. Like many families, we've put our fair share of scoundrels on pedestals. During my journey as a historian, I've traveled a fair distance, toppling them over. Following the toppling of Silent Sam, the UNC Board of Governors Chair and UNC System President issued a joint statement proclaiming the actions of the protesters unacceptable, dangerous, incomprehensible. One member of the Board of Governors has proclaimed, prematurely, I can only hope, that Sam will be back on his perch within a few weeks. Clearly, some have a long way yet to travel. On the question of what to do about Confederate memorials, I confess I wavered. I wavered until I read Mayor Mitch Landrieu's justification for his decisive removal of four Civil War monuments from prominent locations around New Orleans in the spring of 2017. Mayor Landrieu reminds us that these monuments are like KKK crosses burning in someone's lawn, erected purposefully to send a strong message of subjugation, basically a terrorist message. To literally put the Confederacy on a pedestal in our most prominent places of honor, Landrieu says, is an inaccurate recitation of our past, it is an affront to our present, and it is a bad prescription for our future. I commend to you Landrieu's speech in its entirety. Most of our Civil War monuments were erected between 1890 and 1950, which coincides almost exactly with the Jim Crow era. The peak of the memorializing was between 1900 and 1920. For me, the face of that era is my maternal grandmother. I sometimes say I come from a matriarchal line, and for much of my life, the center of the family was this towering matriarch. No one among my ancestors has been more unassailably on a pedestal than she. I knew her as an ahead of her time progressive thinker. She was a suffragette. She was state president of the PTA and battled the state legislature for strong public schools in the 1920s. But she also glorified her father, my great-grandfather, specifically for his service to the great lost cause, and tended to view her slave-owning grandfather through rose-colored glasses as well. I don't know that she agitated for Civil War monuments, but she could well have. What does this mean to take ancestors off their pedestals, and how does one do it? Gently, in the case of this much-loved figure. Once done, we see them in their flawed humanity, and it's a truer picture. For me, this reassessment of history and of personal heroes is an emptying of my cup. It represents the necessity of removing obstacles, obstacles to the relationship that I want to have with truth, obstacles to the relationships I want to have with people, obstacles to the partnerships that we may want to forge, and obstacles to the future that we all want to have.